It's great to see so many of you. I honestly thought there might be six people and a dog here this afternoon. You know, you're in Blackpool and you could be doing anything, but you're here. So well done. It's nice to see some familiar faces amongst those of you here. It's also nice to see some unfamiliar faces as well. My name's Peter Dre. I'm the Director of Creative Evangelism with UCF, the Christian Union Movement in Great Britain. I go to Redeemer Church in Leeds, and lovely to be here with some from my church family as well. Also lovely to be back in Blackpool. I used to serve as the Christian Union staff worker for this region, working with a little C at Blackpool School of Art. And so just walking around the streets earlier, remembering haunts from that time ago then. As I said, we are going to think about this theme of when leaders don't want to lead, and particularly thinking about obstacles that there can be in bringing through younger adults into leadership. I'm going to particularly talk about Generation Z, or as they're unattractively known globally, Generation Z. Sorry about that. But I think you will see that there are lessons that we can learn and apply to other generations as well as we go through. There'll be plenty of time for discussion, and I hope plenty of time for questions at the end. So do be scribbling those things as we go down. I haven't done a handout. I have done a PowerPoint, which is full of pretty graphs and statistics and things like that. So if you would like that at the end, come and give me your email address and I can send that through to you. The spirit, I'm sorry this is so small, the spirit of this afternoon session is a prayerful hope that the Lord might use us in our generation to prepare the generation after us for the works that he is preparing them in advance to do. And do you know what? I've just in the past couple of months been really quite moved by the final chapters of 1 Chronicles. Now, I know, you know, don't hear me trampling all over biblical theology here. I know that 1 Chronicles is talking about a lot more than just leadership development. Nonetheless, I do think that there are lessons for leadership development that we can take from the end of 1 Chronicles. So you remember 1 Chronicles 22, David says, I want to build the temple. And Nathan says, no, not you. That it won't be you that builds the temple, it will be Solomon, your son, who builds the temple. It will be the generation after you that builds the temple. And David's response, 1 Chronicles 22:15, my son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house to be built for the Lord should be of great magnificence and fame and splendor in the sight of all nations. Therefore, I will make preparations for it. So David made extensive preparations before his death. David, no, you're not going to build the temple. Oh, no, okay, well, in which case I will just sit back and wait. No, David says, I will make the preparations so that the generation after can do what God is asking them to do. And that's exactly what the chapters that follow in 1 Chronicles describe. David makes extensive preparations in his time, in his period in history, in his finitude, so that the generation that follows, of which he is not a part, is able to do what God is asking them in their time, and which only they can do. And you know, I have found this to be somewhat kind of a focus for my own life and ministry, which is to think, yes, I'm to be faithful to God in my time and in my generation, to lead and to steward the gospel that God has placed into my hands. But actually, what if part of that stewardship is preparing the generation to come to do what only they can do? Now, the truth is, I don't know about the FIC, but I read that something like 50% of pastors in the UK are aged 55 or over. There are going to be a huge number of people who retire in the next 10 to 15 years. We take a step back and we think about the potential trajectory of Christianity as it sits within the broader culture. And we're tasting a bit of that already, aren't we, of the opposition that can come to holding on to the authentic gospel. Actually, in all likelihood, the generation that follows us is going to know that opposition to a different level. And potentially the call to them in terms of faithfulness will be higher and maybe even costlier than it has been for us in our ministry. And so therefore, what if actually stewarding the gospel now for us in our generation is actually preparing the next generation to come through? And let me just sow this as an idea in your head, not just to match what we've been able to do, but potentially to massively outfly us in all sorts of ways. I work in student ministry, and that means that probably 99% of the people that I spend my weeks with are younger than me. And you know what? It's very easy to start thinking of yourself in quite a strange way when most of the people that you meet with in an average week are younger than you and have probably had less formal discipleship opportunity than you. Temptation is to become quite patronizing, to speak down, to be a bit Daily Mailish and a bit grumbly about those who follow. Okay? It is something, in the Lord's sovereignty, it is something of a quirk that you and I happen to have been born a few decades before those that we're working with. We're not better, okay? But the Lord has placed us in a situation in which we can draw alongside some of these young and emerging leaders. And as we see them come through, to not only hopefully match what we've been able to do, but to massively outfly us. I have got to say that the present student generation that I'm working with, yes, they're full of quirks and foibles. They don't know one end of the Bible from the other, many of them, but they are a spectacular generation. And actually, I think that if we can mentor them and bring them through in a way which honors where they're coming from and which recognizes some of the particularities of their own formation and cultural moment, we can pray very big prayers for those who come through after us. And so that is the spirit that I want us to operate in today. Yes, as we will see, they are quirky. Yes, as we will see, there are things that perhaps those of us who are even just a few years older will look at them and think, it feels like you're a different breed to me. There are things that we maybe might have been able to take for granted, which the emerging adult generation can't take for granted in quite the same way. But the Lord will build his church. The gates of hell will not prevail. And isn't it amazing to think that there could be sat within our churches people who will go on to do heroic things in the local church, in the mission field, in the workplace, in their families, in their communities? Let's hope and pray to that end. So we're going to think about Generation Z, Generation Z, which is defined as today's 13 to 26-year-olds, those who were born between about 1997 and 2010. Now, some people hate generational theory. They basically think, this is just a marketing tool. I actually think it's quite helpful. We're not about stereotyping, but we are about talking about generalizations that you can say this encapsulates many of those who were born in this period at this time. And we will think about ways in which pathways may be attractive or less attractive into leadership for those of this age group. So what I'd love you to do, just perhaps in groups of two or three, introduce yourselves if you need to. And then I want you to think of the 13 to 26-year-olds, either that you know or that you've picked up stories about. What indicators would seem to show that this demographic don't want to lead, particularly within the local church? Okay? So I'll give you just 5 minutes. What things would seem to suggest that this demographic don't want to lead? Go for it for 5 minutes, just with the person next to you. Okay, let's just hear a sample of anecdotes from around the room. We won't chase the microphone around at this point, so if a few people just in a loud voice can shout, and I'll repeat. What things would seem to suggest that today's 13 to 26-year-olds don't want to lead? including in the local church. What do you think? Okay, so there's a sense of just noticing that many younger adults and emerging adults seem fragile, and maybe that carries a sense of a lack of backbone, moral fiber to it. Thank you. What else makes you think that they're not good? Ray?
General lack of commitment.
Okay, so a general lack of commitment. We'll come back to that certainly as we go on. Yeah, what else? Okay, so maybe a sense that there's a perception that some are more bothered about personal achievement and corporate achievement. Yeah, yes. Okay, so not very much focus, so many opportunities potentially that are before them that they don't seem to be able to give themselves to very much in particular, easily distracted. Yeah, that's interesting. Yes. Okay, so fear of missing out, and also the question of, is this worth my time? Is this worth my effort? Is this worth my energy? Liam? Fear of failure, fear of being exposed. Okay, we'll touch on some of these things as we come through, and some of those I might just gently push back on as well. I think that, anecdotally, have you noticed how many youth pastor job adverts there are month after month after month after month after month? And have you noticed how many of them repeat from month to month to month to month to month in a way that you wouldn't have seen a few years ago? Now, very interestingly, church administrator jobs, you only ever see advertised 1 month, and then the next month they're not advertised again. And very often these church administrator posts are being taken by the same generation. Okay, so there is something, isn't there? They're not necessarily averse to Christian ministry, but forms of Christian ministry. And it is certainly true that some of our churches, some of our ministries, are finding it hard to recruit. That's been true for us within UCCF. Actually, we have carried 4 more vacancies than we historically would have held for the reason of not being able to recruit the right people to those roles. In last November's interview, around a year ago, we made 0 appointments over the course of the week, okay? And that was a combination of the wrong person applying, but also just not very many applicants. Now, I've been speaking to a number of pastors about this over the past year, and somebody said to me back in August, it's as if the leadership pipeline has just been switched off or turned down. But actually, whereas a few years ago there were reliably a number of leaders coming through, it seems as though, for whatever reason, not as many are coming through. And I think that is true. It's very difficult to get a kind of statistical picture of everything that's going on in every church and every denomination, every church grouping. But it does seem as though there are not as many young adults coming into ministry. It's not that this generation are unbothered. I think that's one of the kind of media critiques that's often given of young adults. And by the way, it's given of almost any generation when they're young adults, including your generation when you were a young adult. It's not that they're not bothered. In fact, compared to millennials, which is aged those between 26 and about 40 or 41, which might be a good few of us in the room, there are statistics that suggest that actually Generation Z are much more engaged. So don't worry about the detail of this. You won't be able to see it. Just know that the blue bar is describing Generation Z, those up to age of 26, and the green bar is millennials, those aged 26 to 41. And I want you to notice that on all of these things, the blue bar is at least as long as the green bar in every category, apart from the top one, which is to do with money, and we'll come back to that in a minute. So millennials are more likely to donate to charity, but Generation Z are much more likely to make choices over the type of the work they're prepared to do or the organizations they work for based on personal ethics. They're much more likely to be a volunteer or member of a community organization or charity. They're more likely to have created a social media content referring to an environmental, human rights, political or social issue. And similarly on this next page, I won't go through all of them, but do you just notice that consistently the blue bar is longer than the green bar? Okay? Now, what this is saying is that it is a lie to think that young adults, adults up to the age of 26, are not engaged when it comes to community or civic consciousness. It's just not true. Okay? And so there are forms of leadership in certain ways that actually Generation Z are committing themselves to, and there is initiative that they are taking that the older generation, the next generation up, 26 to 41 year olds, both were not doing at their age and are not doing now either. And so there is a potentially a huge amount of positive energy and entrepreneurialism and difference that's there. But nonetheless, that is not translating, for whatever reason, into church leadership. And so the question is why? Now, before we get there, I want to give you a number of characteristics of Generation Z. And I want you to try and imagine yourself, if you're not from that generation, just what it would feel like to be part of that generation and what it would feel like when it comes to thinking about church leadership. So here are some characteristics of them. The first is that they are risk averse. And the headline is that in almost every metric, Generation Z are more risk averse than older generations. In almost every metric. This graph, for those of you who can't see it, are the percentage of Generation Z who have not drunk alcohol at all in the previous week. And you can see that that has more or less doubled from around 30% in 1998, which is when some of us were emerging adults, through to more than 60% now. Okay, now, there are a whole number of reasons for that. But basically, whatever metric you look at, Generation Z are quite socially conservative and quite risk averse. The same would be true when it comes to sexual activity, when it comes to drug taking, but also even things like the percentage of them that have learned to drive, or the percentage of them who as teenagers would go out without their parents. Okay? In every one of these metrics, Generation Z are quite risk averse. Now, partly that's because of kind of helicopter parenting, which they may have experienced from us growing up. So again, let's not be down on those that we have in part produced. But the other thing is this idea of 24/7 reputation management. If I do something stupid and it finds itself on the internet, I have to live with that for the whole of the rest of my life. Therefore, it's better not to do anything risky, which might dog me for the rest of my life. And so one writer says, the whole concept of 24/7 reputation management, such an interesting phrase, isn't it? 24/7 reputation management grew up with this generation of digital natives. They're risk averse. Now, some of you, I hope, are already thinking, aha, I understand then why going into church leadership might not be something that they very naturally reach for. But let's move on. They're economically insecure. So not only did they grow up in the shadow of the 2008 banking crash, but they've lived through COVID, and they've lived through a period of austerity in this country as well. And now they're in a situation where, following Brexit and all of the financial things that have been hit by the pandemic, they are not very optimistic about their economic security. Again, don't worry too much about the detail of the graph on the right-hand side, apart from to notice that it is going up. And the graph is measuring the proportion who believe that the economic and social or political situation will worsen in their time ahead. They're pessimistic. In fact, politically, this is more politically than economically. But I remember talking to a student a couple of years ago. He said, I can't wait for there to be a major world news story, which is good news. It's like every major world event that's happened during my lifetime has been bad news. And I thought, goodness, you know, that is surely stretching the point. But you think, oh, yeah, what actually has happened as a major news story in the world that the emerging generation would think, this is good news. Not very much, actually. And that's true economically as well. And so Generation Z are far more likely to save money, not necessarily for a more prosperous future, which is why older generations would have said that they were saving, but mitigating against the next disaster, which they think is probably on the horizon. Okay, so they're risk averse, they're economically insecure. Next, on to one which you suggested from the floor. They're anxious and they're fragile. Now, exactly how you measure anxiety and fragility is obviously very hard. But Generation Z are reckoned to be the most anxious generation since that brought up in the shadow of the Second World War. And again, there are many, many reasons for that. Partly technological, partly just the period of history that they're in. But they're very anxious. They are anxious about their own mental health. They recognize that they're fragile. But they're also anxious about the mental health of those around them. A survey was done of university students last year, and it found that the average student knows 5 people with a serious mental health problem. 5 people. And so not only are they pretty terrified about their own mental resilience, they're also aware that there are many people around them as well who are not feeling very mentally resilient either. Now, the diagram again on the right-hand side, don't worry about it, but just notice the shape of it. It's measuring the proportion of students who have disclosed a diagnosed mental health problem to their university. And this is showing the past 10 years. It's growing at around 10% year on year. Now, why is this? Well, it's difficult to know, and many people will say, is mental health actually deteriorating, or actually are people more likely to report it? I think probably the answer is actually both. But I found this quote at the bottom very helpful. It's talking about Generation Z and mental health. One reason Generation Z is so adamant about the significance of mental health is because they see members of the older generation not talking about it and suffering as a result. And actually the clinical evidence would seem to back this up. And therefore, there are some members of this emerging adult generation who are worried about their own mental health and who are looking at the models of church leadership that they've seen and think, that is just dangerous. That sort of number of hours that I see my church leader working, I can't do it. And if I try to do it, then it may cause me serious damage. Or I'm worried about what it could look like to care for just this sea of people who are in need. And when I'm not necessarily feeling very resilient myself, is it very wise for me to put myself forward when I might be in situations that would just seem to drain me? Now, again, it's a shame that you can't see this. This is a chart of a whole number of metrics of mental well-being. You can, if you want to look at this later, it's on the Student Minds website. Now, again, what you need to know is that red in the bars describes those who said none of the time. Orange is those who said rarely, but also quite deceptively, green is not great either because it's some of the time. Okay. So none of the time, rarely, some of the time. So the first 3 bars are all kind of negative overall statements. Let me just read through the things that are on the axis at the side. And just notice how far the bars go along. So the top one is, I've been feeling cheerful. Notice only 32% of students say, I've been feeling cheerful. This is over the previous week. I've been interested in new things. Only 36% of people say, students say, they've been interested in new things often or all of the time. I've been feeling loved. Only 49%. I've been able to make up my own mind. 53%. I've been feeling confident. Only 29% would say that. Been feeling close to other people, only 35% agree. I've been feeling good about myself, only 30%. I've been thinking clearly, 41%. I've been dealing with problems well, 34%. I've had energy to spare, 18%. I've been interested in other people, 38%. I've been feeling relaxed, 19%. I've been feeling useful, 32%. I've been feeling optimistic about the future, 34%. I've got to say, as somebody who works with students, I look at that and it breaks my heart. By the way, if you have students in your church, do you advocate for them in this area? Do you know, it seems to me that Christians can advocate for the emerging adults who, for whatever reason, are feeling extraordinarily fragile as they come through. You might just want to think how that affects thoughts of coming into formal church leadership or leadership elsewhere. Generation Z are diverse. They see themselves as the most individualized generation alive. In fact, they look at all of our generations and they say, you're pretty vanilla compared to all of us. And not without reason. 72% of today's university undergraduates are white, which means that 28% aren't. Interestingly, we did a snapshot survey of university Christian unions this week, and we found that 30% of those in university Christian unions aren't white. And so the generation that are coming through that we want to champion are not exclusively or even hugely in the majority white, but will be from every ethnic background. Only 66% of Generation Z would say that they're exclusively heterosexual. And get this, 77% of them say that they have experienced discrimination of some sort. And so they're diverse, and they're also bothered about protected characteristics. And again, here's an interesting quote. This got me thinking. Person said, Generation Z defines themselves as being more highly individualized than previous generations. Through direct observation, ongoing dialogue, and project collaboration, this perception is important. Get this sentence. Whether they truly are the most individualized generation of our time or not is almost a moot point if they believe that they are. And so the idea that actually I might be squeezed into a sausage factory approach of, you know, you come in, do this thing, turn the crank and whoop, out pops a Christian leader is not something that they will find very interesting. In fact, they will probably be actively put off by that kind of approach. Related to that, they lack in confidence. They don't lack in confidence in any way. In fact, I read this week that when they were asked, do you think that you are above or below average intellectual ability, 2/3 of them said, I'm smarter than average. And so when it comes to intellectual confidence, they've got some. But in other ways, they really don't. Now, again, I'm sorry that you can't see this, but let me take you through this. They really lack confidence in their own ability, particularly in social situations. Here's a survey that was done by the Prince's Trust with 18-year-olds in 2015 and repeated in 2022. So the top one says, I have confidence to make up my own mind. In 2015, 57% of 18-year-olds agreed with that statement. By 2022, it decreased 10% to 47%. I know what's expected from me at work. This is those who were working at that time. 68% said that they agreed with that in 2015. By 2022, that had decreased to 49%. I feel able to concentrate on one task for a sustained period. Somebody commented on this. 53% in 2015, 39% in 2022. And then finally, I found this so interesting. I feel able to talk to senior people at work. 39% in 2015, 21% in 2022. And so they are fragile, not only in the terms of their mental health, but also when it comes to trusting their own ability, not when it comes to the kind of brain side of things, but when it comes to social situations and when it comes to relating to other people in a professional context. They're cautious of taking responsibility. Here's the final trend. But actually, contrary to the idea that children are growing up too fast, the evidence would seem to suggest that they're growing up much more slowly than previous generations. We've kind of touched on this a bit earlier. They were parented more closely. It's in part because of the abduction of Madeleine McCann, actually, that after that horrible, horrible thing that happened, parents were just wanting to keep their children much closer to them in that point onwards. There's also a technological aspect to it. Generations that are much more likely to say, I have a good relationship with my parents and I communicate frequently with my parents. How do they communicate with their parents? WhatsApp. And so you think about the kind of things that you would talk about in a WhatsApp group. That's the kind of things they're talking about with their parents. And the kind of things that you would never talk about in a WhatsApp group, they rarely talk about with their parents. And so, yes, they're closer to their parents, but you think about what you talk about in a WhatsApp group, it's funny gifts and Fantasy Premier League, isn't it? And the Great British Bake Off, not things of great substance and wisdom that are being passed on. And so some writers have taken to speaking about a second adolescence that's being experienced by many in their early 20s. Things that historically might have been done by teenagers, which are now only being experienced by people often once they've graduated. And so that's another reason that they're cautious of taking responsibility. I'm just frightened of being an adult. I'm frightened of growing up. And here's the other thing, that Generation Z are worried about being part of the problem when it comes to the failures of leadership. And particularly when it comes to us, they hear about leadership scandals, leadership failure, and they think, do you know what? I'm so sickened by that. I want to have nothing to do with it. I'll leave it to others. And so before we go into groups, let me just talk about Generation Z in the workplace. We're increasingly employing people within UCF now who would fall into this category. And it's been really noticeable in the past 2 or 3 years that the outlook of those who've come from this generation is somewhat different, even from those above them, even those who have come through and who are working in Christian ministry. So Generation Z's expectations of the workplace is this: fairer salaries, more time off, opportunity to work remotely, and a greater social and environmental responsibility. Survey after survey after survey after survey of Generation Z in the workplace say these are things that we want. And not even that. They're not just things that we want. These are pretty much things that we will demand. I got a holiday request through yesterday from one of our staff workers. They put in a holiday request. Their supervisor had said, no, it's not actually a very good time for the ministry for you to go on holiday at that point. I got a ferocious email, which was absolutely this, from somebody who was the kind of archetypal member of Generation Z. We want fairer salaries, more time off. We want flexibility, more time to work remotely. And we want to work for something which is responsible. Now, again, in part, before we think, oh, goodness, what an entitled group of people. This is partly a reflection of what they have seen damaging those who have worked in other generations. So here's a quote from one of the commentators. Having observed older workers experience burnout, time poverty, and economic insecurity at the grindstone, some of you think that's my job description. They're demanding more. Quentin Orange says, they're willing to work hard for the right employer, but if the juice isn't worth the squeeze, they'll leave and they'll make ends meet some other way. Now, I want you to be as sympathetic as you can to the things that Generation Z value and care about. Now, those at the back, you're not going to be able to read this. But here are some questions for you to discuss in groups. You might want to pick one of the three and go into it in some detail or have a go at all three of them. The top one says, imagine yourself to be a member of Generation Z. For some of us, that might be more easy than others to imagine. And I want you to, you know, nobody would ever actually say this, why are you cautious to lead at church? But imagine that. That's the question which is buzzing around in your head. If you're being honest, how do you answer? And I want you to answer in as Generation Z-y a way as you can. Okay, so don't be a Daily Mail critique of Generation Z. Try and imagine yourself to be Generation Z. Or you might want to go for one of these questions. An apparently keen young Christian adult is seemingly diffident about joining your church as an unpaid ministry trainee. Why might this be? Try and go beyond just the very obvious answer there, although the very obvious answer is something to consider as well. But then more positively, where have you seen examples of younger adults taking responsibility? In what areas or ways are young adults apparently more willing to step up and lead? Do you want to have a discussion about those for, let's say, 7 minutes? And then I'll bring us together again. Okay, let's come back together. I won't take feedback this time, but I want to take you through just... hopefully you see what some of the problems are, okay? At least in the minds and the eyes, the hearts of these emerging leaders. And I do think if you can sympathetically step into their shoes and their eyes, that is part of the way I think of being able to then encouragingly draw alongside them and to help them cut their teeth as leaders. But let me just give you some pointers which I've been thinking about personally as I've thought about bringing leadership Redeemer in Leeds, but also from a UCF perspective as well. I don't think that this is the full answer. And so in a minute, some of you may come up with some much better answers than me, but here's what we need. First of all, to be clear about expectations. To be very clear about expectations of those who we are asking to lead. More than maybe any other generation alive, Generation Z want to know exactly what it is that they're committing themselves to before they make that step of commitment. It's interesting, isn't it, in the pastoral epistles, how often Paul says to Timothy and to Titus, by the way, this is what you've committed yourself to. And I just want to remind you of that. And so if actually we think reminding those of a younger generation of what they're committing themselves to is, you know, if we need encouragement, that's a good idea. The pastoral epistles would seem to give us some extra encouragement there. That transparency, being totally honest about what's involved, is something very appealing to Generation Z. They're used to having the wool pulled over their eyes. They're used to things looking shiny online and being different when you actually see the thing or the person. And so transparency, authenticity, being honest about what you're asking of them, even though you might think, goodness, this surely is going to put them off. No, actually, it's much more likely to think this is a person that I can trust when they're calling me to come in and to lead. My sense is that prospective young leaders have lots of questions. You know that bit in the interview at the end and you get to, do you have any questions? Until a few years ago, people would, no, not really. Or it would be something about, you know, totally, you know, can you tell me what your petrol rate is or things like that. Now it's, you have to leave a full half hour at the end for the questions that they have. And they expect you to have answers. And so not just when it comes to job interviews, but actually all along the way, invite and expect to be able to answer their questions. This is what it is actually like. Serving in this ministry, leading this team, coordinating this group, joining church staff, being an assistant pastor. They want to know exactly what you're expecting from them. And I think this is probably particularly true of paid roles. So if you have a job description, it's worth looking back and thinking, a generation ago, a vague job description was quite attractive. Now a vague job description is not attractive. And it's just worth going back. But also, I think, when it comes to volunteer roles, to what extent, when we're saying, can you join the youth team or can you lead the youth team, to what extent can they actually understand what you're asking from them? Remember, their fear is that commitment is going to take over their life. And it may be that you know this is actually only going to take 3 hours a week. And you can honestly, hand on heart, say, this will only take 3 hours a week. But unless you tell them that, they'll probably assume it's going to take over 30 hours of their week. And so you need to describe exactly what you're expecting from them. Members of Generation Z demand, and again, we see this from our staff, much more feedback than those in other generations, and they want it to be in person. They do not want an email. They do not want a WhatsApp. They want a meeting with you. And therefore, actually, if they are going to join the team or lead the team or join as assistant pastor or youth worker or whatever, you need to be very clear about how feedback will be given, how regularly you will meet with them, and how that feedback will be delivered. They will want to be flexible. And you as a leader need to work out how flexible can you be, and I would encourage you to be flexible where you can be, without damaging your church's ministry. If you become endlessly flexible, it will just frustrate everyone. I think within UCF, we probably made some decisions actually for the best, thinking we want to be flexible for this person, and that's actually created a job which is just impossible to do, which is frustrating to them, but also frustrating to their colleagues as well. But where flexibility is possible, let me encourage you to explore it. Here again is, this isn't a Christian author, but they said, assume nothing, avoid polish, authenticity is always better than sheen. And probably if I was to say one thing that I could leave you with about how you speak about leadership with the upcoming generation, it would be that. Authenticity is always better than sheen. Be honest. Doesn't mean that you've got to deny the joy of what it means to be a minister amongst God's people or serving him in that way. But feel free to be honest about the things that you find hard as well as the things that bring you real joy. Secondly, if you're a church elder, particularly pastor or trustee, and you're thinking about paid roles, let me consider you to reconsider your models of remuneration. Part of the reason that those youth worker adverts go month after month after month after month after month after month is because they are terribly paid. And perhaps Generation Z have a point at saying that is not very honouring to those who are doing those roles. And so can I just humbly encourage you to reconsider remuneration? Now, within UCF, we have a graduate volunteer program called Relay, which is 10 months long, where Relay workers must raise all of their cost of salary, their cost of ministry and expenses over the course of a year. But when it comes to our staff workers, what we've taken to do is to informally benchmark our staff workers' salaries to the average first graduate salary. Now, it would seem to me that that's not a bad thing to do. That actually, if you're looking to employ a youth worker who has just graduated, you might think, what is the average salary for a graduate? And that is the kind of ballpark figure that we should be thinking about. Thirdly, teach and model sacrifice. Now, many emerging leaders haven't been taught very much about sacrifice. By the way, that's not their fault. That might be our fault. But they also haven't seen it very widely modeled within the church either. And so when the brother earlier was saying that leaders are asking, is this sacrifice worth it? Is it worth me putting my time into this? That is exactly the question that they're asking. There are all sorts of things that I could give my limited energy to. Is this the thing? Is this one of those things that is worth going for? Now, we have a gathering called the UCF Student Council. We have 11 students who represent current students from around the country. And I was with them in March and we were talking about CE leadership. Why is it actually, I mean, the same problems. Why is it that more people are saying no to serving as CE leaders than ever? And I was saying, you know, do we just need to make the job easier? And these students pushed back very strongly. They said, no, don't. Okay, this isn't a case. You shouldn't make it easier. I mean, we can't do that anyway, really. But they would say, no, that's not the question to ask. And here is what one student said. I loved it so much, I wrote it down at the time. A student in Canterbury, she said this, I was blown away and sometimes baffled by the joy of our staff and relay workers as they served. So look, what do you want from UCCF in order to help you serve as leaders? She said this, what we really want to see is more of our staff worker and that they would model to the CU, to each of us, what it means to find joy in the midst of sacrifice. as leaders yourself, how much of your own life are you letting emerging leaders into? So that in your own life, they can see the contours of joy in the midst of sacrifice. They always go together in scripture, don't they? Joy and sacrifice. It's not that we're just calling them to dour sacrifice and you've just got to grit your teeth harder and stop being such a snowflake. No. Nor is it, come and be a Christian leader and you will fly through life with joy. We all know that's not the case. Ajit Fernando, one of my favorite writers from South Africa, says there are 35 times in the New Testament where joy and sacrifice are mentioned in the same breath. They go together. Christian ministry is about pouring out your life in the name of Jesus, but in terms of losing things, finding that Jesus is there with you and he's enough. And actually that, by the way, is what prevents us from running ourselves into the ground, isn't it? Just putting in hours and hours and hours extra, which is a total put off, not only to Generation Z, but actually I think to the watching unsaved world as well. Teach and model sacrifice. Are there people within your church who model sacrifice and joy in the midst of it that you just think, what an amazing mentor that person could be to an emerging adult? It doesn't have to be a formal mentoring partnership. But actually, how can we expose some of these emerging adults to sacrifice? Perhaps we need to teach more on sacrifice as well. This is one of the things that came out of this meeting that we had with students in March. We have an annual student leaders gathering called Forum in August, and we weren't quite sure what the theme of it was going to be this year. In the end, we came up with courageous. And Matt Waldock from City Church spoke in the account of Gideon from Judges 6-8 in the morning, what it means to act with courage in the midst of weakness. And then we looked at that from different angles in the evening as well. How often do you talk about genuine sacrifice within your local church context? Fourthly, offer short-term leadership tasters. Now, I know that short-term thinking is part of the problem, but actually giving emerging leaders short-term opportunities to lead will be more attractive to them. We found that within Christian unions, students are much more likely to volunteer to lead an initiative for 3 to 4 weeks, even if it's quite demanding, than if we're asking them to be a CU leader for a year. People who say no to CU leadership for a year are willing to put in 3 or 4 weeks and to go deep during that time. And so I just wonder whether within our own local churches, but actually as we partner together with other local churches as well, we need to think about short-term tasters. Perhaps you're a church in a university city and you could partner up with a church that isn't in a university city. And part of the way that you could invest in the leadership of your emerging leaders, but also become a church which is genuinely centrifugal, which is not just looking to appoint leaders to replace your current leaders, but to be a net exporter of leaders to churches around as well, is to offer shorter term leadership tasters as well. If Generation Z are worried about overcommitting themselves, then actually giving them a short term opportunity to cut their teeth, to taste what it's like to be a leader just for a short period and in a place which is relatively safe, that can be the thing which can get them going. Fifthly, seek out their thoughts. I mean, do you know how many emails you get which says, you know, what's your feedback on this, this, and this? And most of us just delete the emails, don't we? It's so annoying to get them. Generation Z do the same, but they expect to be asked their viewpoint, and when they have something to share, they expect to be able to share it. Now, remember, they may feel underconfident in coming forward and saying what they actually think. And so, therefore, the onus is on you not just to respond positively when they have ideas, but to actively seek out their ideas. That is part of the way that you show them that you trust their judgment and that you actively want them to be part of whatever it is that you're doing. Again, here's a quote, and this is from, again, a secular writer, but I think it applies to Christian ministry as well. The old adage that if you want commitment from people, then they need to be involved, has never been more true. You need to make it clear that you welcome their input. No matter how much of it there might be, and how often it might arrive. Without a sense of you said, we did, a lot of your potential future leaders will wander off very quickly. How easy is it for younger adults within your church to give their thoughts on what you're doing as a church? How often would you garner feedback from those who might have incredibly perceptive things to say about how to reach that emerging generation, but who won't offer their feedback unless they're actively asked? Can you seek out their thoughts? Show that you trust them. Show that you care about their opinion. Show that you think that they have things to offer. And then finally, get them working with others who aren't like them. So Generation Z want to work in diverse workplaces and teams. The pie chart to the side says, would you be more likely to apply for a job that had recruiters and materials that reflected an ethnically and racially diverse workplace? And 69% say absolutely, 21% say probably. 90% of those asked said, the racial profile of a workplace would affect my likelihood as to whether I want to go and work there. A similar proportion is said about age diversity as well. My guess is that some of the churches that we have here are incredibly diverse in terms of the nationalities who are in our churches, in terms of the ethnic groups, in terms of the age profile that's there. That is hugely appealing to emerging adults. They want to build relationships with people who are not like them. Remember, they're not very confident to do so, as they probably won't take the initiative by themselves. But nearly every emerging adult, if you say, would you like to be mentored by somebody in this church, they bite your hand off. Would you like to work alongside people who are from different class backgrounds to you, different countries to you? They say, yes, absolutely. And so, are there ways in which you can take some of the emerging adults within your church and partner them up with others? Do you know what? I think those relationships would be a mutual benefit. That those of other generations, different ethnic groups, would be blessed by being alongside some of these emerging adults. But also those emerging adults would begin to sense that Ephesians 3 vision for what it means to be part of God's people as well. So let me come back to where we started. Here's my prayerful hope. That in a sense, we're willing to see ourselves as little Davids, not again in a biblical theological sense. Okay, but as those who know we're not going to get to build the temple, but the next generation will. And actually part of what it means for us to be faithful in our day, and in fact, part of our worship and our leadership is to make the extensive preparations, as David did, so that the generation that follows can lead God's people and potentially can lead God's people in a way which massively outflies our generation, regardless of the challenges that they may face. I've got about 10 minutes, I think, just for comments or questions. I think there's a microphone. Thanks, Tim. There's a microphone around. If you've got any comments or questions, anything that you'd like me to clarify, anything else that struck you as we go along, I'd love to hear them. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks. Just in terms of pastoral ministry, of churning out a sermon or two every week and so forth, do you think that the education that is being received at universities and so on prepares people well to be able to delve into texts and to discipline themselves to learn languages and that sort of thing and to read into commentaries? I don't know the answer to that, but is that a factor?
The short answer is probably not. It has been the policy of successive governments to privilege science over the arts, and that's in many ways a very good thing and good for our economy in certain ways. In other ways, it's difficult, and it does mean that there will be a smaller proportion of students, university students, who've been trained to read a text carefully. It's also fair to say that the models of teaching and learning within universities have dramatically changed. So there are not very many people now who will have lectures very small percentage of universities will offer lectures anymore, but it will be things like seminar groups and workshops. Now, again, that's not a wholly bad thing, because it's encouraging things like listening skills, critical thinking, that sort of thing. But one of the costs, I think, probably has been concentration when it comes to presentation, lectures, that sort of thing. And I think, yes, when it comes to learning to read texts, that's something which you can't count on in the same way, probably even as 10 years ago. My own sense actually is that reading text is a little bit like a muscle. And, you know, it's a bit like when you start going to the gym. At first you say, oh my goodness, I'm never doing this again. And to be honest, you still think that, don't you? But it becomes slightly less bad the more of it you do. I think for most people, actually they can learn to increase their focus. They can learn to increase close reading of text, but it takes time. And it's not in the air in educationally as it would have been probably even 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, thanks. Other comments or questions?
Thank you very much. It's been really helpful. Mike Smales, we're down on the south coast in Bournemouth. Have you noticed in your experience a difference between those young adults who already have, as it were, a real fire in their belly to serve the Lord, a desperation to see how they might end up in some kind of leadership responsibility? Do they still grapple with the things you've been outlining in the same ways?
Yeah, pretty much, absolutely. They still breathe the same air. They still drink the same water. I can think of somebody who, I mean, I think he probably will end up in ministry eventually. But when it came to finance, you know, the idea that he couldn't afford not to earn at the level which he thought could see him through the next crisis, that was certainly a big thing. I think he would say that he's socially underconfident when it comes to relating to people who aren't of his generation in a way that I think would have been unusual when I was a young graduate. So I suppose the thing that I'm looking for beyond godly character when it comes to a leader is that kind of spark, fire in the belly. You know, in student ministry, you've got to have something that's going to get you out of bed in nasty November when it's been ages since Freshers Week. It's still ages till Christmas. The clocks have just changed, so it's right now, actually. You've got to have something that's going to get you out of bed and just think, I want to see Christ formed in this way. That in and of itself is now no longer enough, I think, for somebody to think, I will take a risk and go into ministry because of these other concerns that they would have. Yeah.
Just talking about that risk, one thing that we talked about here was, has the social cost, the cost of being a Christian leader increased? And that is another factor.
I think it is. I think, so the idea of, I don't want to be tarnished, you know, I don't want to have to live with something that makes my life difficult for the whole time is certainly part of it. It is, however, true that this generation basically haven't ever known anything other than being a Christian in the minority. And so there are certain ways in which, that's why evangelistically, actually, they're quite a lot more engaged. They're just less weird than a lot of my generation were when we were at university. They've never really known a Christian subculture. And therefore, all the way through school, they probably knew this as well. So yes, it is a factor. But whereas for some slightly older people, they've been maybe unsettled by the uncoupling of the culture from Christianity and knowing lots of people who are nominal Christians falling away, they probably haven't seen that in quite the same way. And so that's part of their strength, actually. They're much more empathetic. Missionally, they're much more engaged. They're actually quite a lot more prayerful, I think, than when they were their age and people around me. But yes, the idea of kind of a stigma is something that they would feel. And they would experience that as a deep kind of shame, some of them as well. Yeah, that's another gospel theme. Yeah.
So, Peter, I have a question for you. You said, I don't want to be tarnished, is one of the things that they're saying.
Yeah.
You know, in looking at this list of things that you gave us to kind of mull over, are there things in their own life, though, like personal sins, personal decisions that they're making that is also hindering them from serving in a place that, that's ministry oriented?
Yes. That's a very good question. I think that's true of lots of young adults as they come through into leadership. It was true for me as well. I just think, goodness, my life is such a mess. How on earth can I go and how can I go and serve? What has changed is that, and there's an excellent book by Simon somebody called Looking Shame in the Eye. It's an IVP book. He is somebody who served in Japan and served in a kind of honor and shame culture out in Japan. Came back to the UK and realized, oh goodness, in the time I've been away in Japan, British Christianity, Western Christianity has moved away from a category of guilt. There is this standard that I'm falling short of in the things that I do, to shame instead. Now, again, that's partly to do with social media. It's partly to do with just an erosion of the idea of absolute morality within the culture as well. But this idea of there is something inherent to me which makes me this kind of dirty, unclean person. Now, my sense is that many of us, when we meet young potential leaders who are gripped by shame, is that we say, you don't need to feel guilty anymore. And that's half of the answer, but it's not the full answer. And so it certainly is true that when it comes to deep shame, let me just describe what it feels like to be ashamed, okay? And then hopefully you'll get what I'm getting at. I went to a whole number of years ago a workshop on shame. And we were sat in a semicircle, and we were each given a post-it note. And we had to write on that post-it note something that nobody else in the room knew about us. And the instructor said, this should be the kind of thing that your spouse doesn't know about you, or your parents don't know about you, or your home group leader doesn't know about you. So your heart begins to beat, thinking, goodness, what is going to happen now? Write it down on the post-it note. Okay, fine, do it. Then they said, okay, fold the post-it note over once. Okay, fine. Fold the post-it note over again. Okay, fine. Fold the post-it over again. So it's a tiny little post-it note. Said, right, everybody put out their left hand. Take your post-it note in your right hand and put it into the hand of the person on your left. What is about to happen? And at this point, the instructor says, this is what it feels like to be ashamed. There's something that feels incredibly personal to you is about to be disclosed in public. And if that thing were disposed in were made known in public, people would never be able to look at you in the same way again. And they probably wouldn't want to be your friend because they probably think you're not the kind of person I want to be identified with. Now that is the kind of way of relating to sin that generation come up with. Now at that point, simply speaking in categories of forensic dealing with guilt is helpful, but it only goes too far because that's like, well, okay, that I understand that Jesus has dealt with what I've done that's wrong, but what about me? I just feel like a cesspit on the inside. And actually, the Bible's answer is much greater than that. Not only are we forgiven, but that we're adopted, that we're welcome, that we're loved. And that the emerging generation absolutely needs to know that Jesus' death on the cross not only secures their justification, hallelujah and amen, but also secures our eternal welcome just as we are. Even though we return as prodigals, stinking like pigs, it's at that point where the Father comes and envelops us and puts robes on us and a ring on our finger and kills the fattened calf for us. And so it's at that level, I think, that this generation need to know Jesus is enough for you. He not only knows what you've done, but he knows what you're like. And he's done everything that you might be part of his people forever. And that is something which commonly I think this generation need to know. We are out of time. I was about to preach on Luke 15. But for your benefit, you've got an EGM to go to in a few minutes, which is much more exciting than a than a little sermon on Luke 15. How about I pray for us and then we can disperse. Father, we thank you so much. We thank you so much for the ministry situations you've put us in. With Paul in 2 Corinthians, we say, who is equal to such a task? Who's competent? We're not competent. But thanks be to God who makes us competent through the gospel he gives us and the spirit who goes with us. And Father, I just pray for my brothers and sisters that you would give them wisdom to take away that which is pertinent to them from the last few minutes. And Father, we dare to pray that for our nation and for the nations, you would produce leaders who minister to our hearts, who love the lost, who make Christ known, and who build his church. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this recording from the 2023 FIEC Leaders Conference. If you found it helpful, please leave a comment or a review and share it with others. And you can find more resources for church leaders, including talks and seminars from the conference, at fiec.org.uk/LC2023.